This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
In late October, 24 Oregon policymakers, advocates, police, and prosecutors landed in Lisbon, Portugal, to learn about that nation's two-decade-old drug decriminalization law. They arrived a few days after reporter Noel Crombie, who traveled to the country independently to do much the same. This is Beat Check with The Oregonian. I'm Elliot Noose. The fact-finding missions come 2 years after Oregon voters approved Measure 110, the state's own drug decriminalization law. But the voting public has soured on the law in the years since, as the potent and addictive drug fentanyl has proliferated and overdoses have skyrocketed. Polls suggest a majority now favor a full or partial repeal. So, does Portugal have the answers? Let's hear what Noel and the Oregon delegation learned in Lisbon. Noel, welcome back to Beat Check.
Thanks for having me.
Let's talk first a little bit about Measure 110. How exactly is this law supposed to work?
This is a voter-approved law. It's the result of a ballot measure, and it does two things. First, and the most high-profile thing that it does is to decriminalize minor possession of street drugs. So possessing drugs used to be a misdemeanor. Now it's a violation on par with a traffic violation. People who encounter police and they have a small amount of drugs on them are not going to be arrested or taken to jail. They receive a citation, and on this citation, they there's a phone number to call for them to get sort of screened for services, including treatment. The second part of the law is a more systemic change, and that is to redirect hundreds of millions of dollars in cannabis tax revenue towards treatment and treatment services and a whole range of programs and services intended to address substance abuse addiction. Or substance abuse and addiction. And so those are the two main things that Measure 110 set out to do.
And how has that played out since the law took effect in February 2021?
Well, it had a rocky rollout in the first year with money slow to get out the door. And that led to this sort of a delay in getting the services up that had been promised under the law, and I think that led to some frustration, not just on the part of on the public, but also lawmakers as well. And the other sort of significant development we've seen in the time since the law passed or the law was implemented is really a failure on the part of people who receive these citations to do any kind of meaningful follow-up. So the way this was pitched to voters is police would have these encounters with people who were in minor possession, and then they'd get this phone number, and then they'd be routed into to get help. And that really never played. That has not panned out. That scenario has not really played out, and it hasn't played out for a variety of factors. Police didn't really embrace this ticketing system. Generally speaking, some police agencies were more kind of robust about it than others. Portland Police earlier this year did take a more enthusiastic approach toward issuing the citations. But again, the citations don't seem to lead anywhere in the system that's been set up. People are not really following through on the phone call and the services that people hoped they would get.
So the decriminalization piece was sort of a light switch that just flipped on. The rest of it has been much slower to take effect or to have any effect at all.
That's correct. I will say, though, that money, a lot of money has gone out in grants, and programs are getting funded. And, we are hearing about services that are being offered that haven't been offered in the past, or expanded capacity. So money is out the door at this point, and some of those services are getting funded.
So that's the backdrop of this trip to Portugal. Who arranged for all of these policymakers and other interested parties to make the trip?
Yeah, the trip came from the Oregon Health Justice Recovery Alliance, which is an organization of proponents of Measure 110 and advocates and treatment providers and other supporters, which also receives funding from the Drug Policy Alliance, which is the major financial backer of Measure 110. This trip was pitched as a fact-finding trip, and they invited a lot of people and offered to foot the bill, the travel bill for a lot of people to go. People who are really, either sort of so-called stakeholders or policy people who are going to be influential in shaping the future of this policy. And this would be to basically look at various aspects of Portugal's program. Oregon's decriminalization policy was modeled in part on Portugal's approach, inspired by that idea. And so now, 3 years later, this idea came about to actually go see what that program looks like. Critics question, why is this trip coming? Why now? This kind of exploratory trip should have been done when the state was, sort of designing this program and this approach. But the trip came just a couple of, a little more than a month ago, and it was really a chance for people to see what Portugal's strategy looks like up close. I will say that not everyone's trip was covered by the Health Justice Recovery Alliance. Most of the people who went, their expenses were covered, but there were a small number who either covered their own bills or their employers paid their way.
And you were there, of course, to observe, and the Oregonian, by the way, paid for your travel and your accommodations. Can you tell us a little bit about how you and your editors approached this trip to ensure that you were able to report independently while also sort of seeing what these lawmakers and others were seeing and learning and hearing?
Yeah, first, just, a shout out to the Oregonian editors who saw the value of this trip and, made the extraordinary decision to send a reporter overseas, to look at the policy up close. I think that shows that we are really invested in covering this topic and doing the best we can to show all of its complexity. And so, yeah, the paper sent me on this trip, and it took a lot of planning. There was a lot of planning to figure out, what is it that we wanted to see, and how could we, do our own reporting, and then overlap and see what the lawmakers and the others were going to see as well. So I overlapped with them for about a day, a solid day, and then part of of another day. But I what I wanted to see were components of Portugal's program, particularly around this idea called harm reduction. Portugal has a strategy that it's got several elements to it: prevention, harm reduction, treatment, and then reentry. So helping people who are in recovery reenter society. And I wanted to look at their harm reduction program, and what did that actually look like on the ground? And harm reduction is a phrase that gets used a lot in this in reporting on this topic and in this kind of field. And it's in essence, it is the idea of keeping people who are using drugs, who may be addicted to drugs, you know, alive and, you know, safer, healthier. And it doesn't prioritize sort of sobriety. That's not the ultimate goal of harm reduction programs. And so I wanted to look at that up close. So I ended up reaching out to the leaders of Portugal's public health system and, you know, the architect of its decriminalization policy, who remains in a really key position today. He helped design it a couple decades ago, was instrumental in getting it started. And, you know, and I had conversations with him before the trip, and he helped me get connected with some of the, as they call them, NGOs, you know, non-governmental organizations, but as here we'd call them nonprofits. Some of the nonprofits that are delivering this, doing this work on the ground. And so I ended up going with a team of street workers, outreach workers, a social worker and a nurse. And I spent basically their shift with them out on the streets of Lisbon. It was, you know, absolutely a privilege to be in a, you know, in another country with professionals and seeing, you know, a whole country up close like that. It's, it was really fascinating, and got to see their interactions with people on the streets of Lisbon and how they do this kind of really careful one-on-one work with people who are really at the fringes of Portuguese society. So I spent time with them. I did have I worked with a photographer who was based in Lisbon, and he is fluent in English. And so he helped with translation as well as doing his own kind of journalism, you know, visual journalism for the assignment. And then I wanted to see a safe use site, which is a place where people can go who are using drugs, and they can go into these settings and, you know, use meth. Meth is not prevalent in Portugal. They were using crack cocaine and heroin. And there are professionals on site who are there really as overdose prevention workers, and also a potential entry point to services and other care. Because again, we're talking about a group of people who are not likely to be seeking out care, medical care or social work assistance or any programs. Many of them are homeless. And so these sites serve as a kind of entry point into potential help. Those were the two big things that I've spent the bulk of my time doing when I was on my own. And then when I met up with the Oregon delegation, we sat down with, I was there while they met with the architect of the program. And then they also went to a safe use site, and they also went to a mobile methadone a van that delivers methadone to neighborhoods and pockets of the city where people are, you know, there's very high rates of heroin use, and methadone is a daily medication. It's very effective in treating opioid use disorder. And so people, they brought the medicine to these communities. I won't call them communities, really, to these neighborhoods where there were high needs, and people would come to the van and get these medications. I will point out that, and this is a really critical distinction that I made in the first story that I did, and we've got another story coming out shortly, but the first story made clear that Portugal does not have the same illicit drug landscape as the United States or Oregon in particular. It does not have fentanyl, and it does not really have meth. The prevalent drugs there are heroin and crack cocaine. And, you know, and people will argue, well, then is this even a comparison? Can there really be a comparison to be made? And, you know, and some people have raised questions about that, including, you know, those on the trip, that, you know, it's a kind of apples and oranges comparison. How can we really take something from a society that's not grappling with the crisis that's confronting Oregon.
We'll come back to that in just a moment, but I want to ask the, you talked a little bit about the independent reporting that you did, and then some of the experiences that the people who were there as part of the broader delegation had. How do you feel about the experience that you had? Do you feel like you got sort of an unvarnished look at the Portugal system, and do you feel that the lawmakers and policymakers did as well?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. I wasn't living there. I mean, I was just visiting, and my time was brief. And I felt that, and I made the most of every hour I was there. I do feel that Portugal has a strategy, a longstanding strategy, and they've got a kind of a philosophy that shapes that strategy. And that really is, as far as I could see, really rooted in this idea of harm reduction, where treatment is a priority, but they also have a kind of a pragmatic approach to addiction. That it's something, as one psychologist told me, it was kind of like, it's always going to be here, accept it and work with that reality. Whereas I think in the United States, or at least here in the discussions we're having here, there's a more of an emphasis on treatment and solving this problem. And so I think that philosophical difference really comes out between these two countries. But, and so what I saw was not a country where, gosh, everyone is in treatment. Everything looks, they've got this all in hand. No, it seemed like, from my conversations with a lot of the people who are doing the work on the ground, the country has really struggled to keep up with the evolving drug landscape, the emergence of crack cocaine, an increase in the migrant population, which has really struggled significantly with addiction, struggled to meet those needs. They've got stratospheric homelessness rate that's just gone through the roof in the past few years. Compounded by all kinds of economic factors in Portugal. And so, I did see people living on the streets. I spoke with people who are using drugs, who have been using them for a long time, who said that, drug use remains, rampant, including public drug use. So I don't think that this was a policy that really, kind of solved a problem, but it's one country's way of addressing this problem.
Yeah, let's talk a little more about Portugal. You had some really interesting context in your story about how that country's decriminalization laws came about. Can you tell us a little about that?
Yeah, and I've spoken with Dr. João Goulart, who's, as I said, kind of the one of the key figures who helped usher in this approach about 20 years ago. And, he's a family physician. So he comes at this from a really kind of a public health perspective. And, in my conversations with him, he, he's pointed to the evolution of this drug approach in Portugal is really rooted in its history, that the country struggled with illicit drugs beginning in the mid 70s as the country sort of emerged from a dictatorship into a democratic republic, that at that time cannabis flooded the country. It was imported by people who came there from former Portuguese colonies, as well as soldiers who had fought in those places. And he described this as a kind of, this freedom that swept over the country, and along with that came this explosion in experimentation, and that cannabis escalated into heroin, and that epidemic of heroin use touched all elements of society, all classes. He noted that there were very high-level government officials whose own family members were, lost to addiction. That there was a point in Portuguese society where it was hard to find anyone who had not been touched by addiction. And so it was a crisis. It was seen as a countrywide crisis. Along with it, there were rising rates of HIV infection. And so he and others were tasked with coming up with a strategy to address this. And it was part of that strategy. And as he says, as Dr. Galau has described this, this was actually not really a centerpiece of the strategy, but part of the strategy was decriminalization, and that gets a lot of attention. But that there were a lot of other things that Portugal did around that time, and that included dedicating money toward prevention or in early grades, as early as kindergarten, and not necessarily talking about drugs in those ages, but talking about risks and making decisions and age-appropriate discussions around, making safe choices. That began really early. That's something that it sounded, in my conversation with him, like that's something that also involves police going into schools and talking about prevention and drugs. And I will say that that in my conversations in Portugal, police have really, and the role of police is really, the volume is really turned down on that. You don't hear about that as much as you do here, where police are really a big player in how we address addiction. There, it's really not so much. And then again, spending money on harm reduction. So that means needles, syringe exchanges. Currently, it means handing out naloxone. It means these safe use sites, which are much more common in Europe. And then treatment. The country set aside money for treatment and easy access to treatment. So if someone said they wanted treatment, they got it on the spot. That is not the case in Portugal today, where waiting lists have become more common. And then these reentry programs that help people with housing and employment.
You mentioned a couple of times too that the landscape in Portugal differs because in part because of the drugs that are widely available there, and how that compares to Portland.
Yeah, I mean they just don't have as drug researchers in Europe have pointed out to me. Europe generally didn't grapple with the opioid epidemic the way the United States did. Did not have the prescription opioid crisis that ballooned into where we are now. And so without that, they're dealing with drugs we've long been dealing with, heroin in particular.
So you have this group of people from Oregon crossing an ocean to learn about Portugal's experience. Some of them are like the Democratic lawmakers who attended are probably sympathetic, at least to the idea of drug decriminalization and a treatment-centered focus. Others are probably inclined towards some skepticism of that idea. What did all of these participants tell you afterward?
Yeah, I would say most were inclined to be more, if not outright supportive of decriminalization, at least were reluctant to recriminalize. And then there were, I think some skeptics. I do think that, everyone who went on the trip understood that it was coming at a really important moment in Oregon, that there is a lot of urgency around Measure 110 because of the really dwindling public support, but also this political push to recriminalize, to roll back decriminalization. And that is creating a lot of pressure on the Oregon legislature to do something to address what are seen as gaps in Measure 110. And, I got a range of responses from people to what they saw on the trip. I think that it was useful for people to see this program up close and to see how another country is dealing with addiction. I think for some people, they did not see how some of what Portugal does is going to be applicable here or usable here for a variety of reasons, whether they're political or practical or even legal. For instance, in Portugal, police officers routinely confiscate street drugs from people, and that's just something here that is really complicated by constitutional protections. And so is that, well, in Portugal, that seemed like a real no-brainer to people. And when I mentioned to law enforcement there that that's not the case here, they were, kind of scratching their heads about that because it seemed like such a low-hanging fruit thing to do. But that's not something, if that's something that is going to require, some more thought as to how you would overcome the constitutional issues with it. The safe use sites, the same kind of political obstacles to overcome in setting up locations where people would be allowed to use fentanyl seem like almost insurmountable politically to some of the people who are on the trip. But again, there were other people on the trip, like people who are in the treatment world and people who had themselves overcome opioid addiction, who thought that that was a no-brainer because those sites have a role in reducing opioid-related deaths and in overdoses. And so, I think there's a people came away from that trip, maybe some of the people, and I've spoken with them that maybe there's a role for private funding of such a site in Oregon. I think the responses were kind of all over the map and people took away, different kind of lessons from it. But I think for many people, the idea that there was not fentanyl there was really significant. Almost hard to draw real comparisons for some folks.
So coming back to Oregon and Measure 110, what are some of the reforms that are being proposed and considered right now? And when are lawmakers or voters going to be making some decisions on that?
Yeah, I think the next 12 months are going to be really significant for the future of this policy. A committee has been meeting, a legislative committee has been meeting the past couple of months to consider potential policy proposals for the legislature to consider next year when it meets. There is pressure on the legislature because there is this effort to potentially go back to the ballot, back to the voters to ask about rolling back decriminalization. And so that's really it's really infusing this with urgency. So I think we'll see something out of the legislature next year. What is that and how far will they go? That's really unclear. The lawmakers I've spoken with, Democratic lawmakers, seem extremely reluctant to undo decriminalization, which was approved by voters just a few years ago. And, there's unease among key lawmakers in undoing that. However, they are considering criminalizing public use, which is obviously a very big issue in Portland. Will that be enough to stave off a ballot measure effort? I don't know. I don't know if that step will go far enough for people who really want to see possession recriminalized.
Is there anything you can say at this point about where your reporting on this issue is headed, either, coming off of your Portugal trip or more broadly on Measure 110?
Yeah, I've got another piece coming out here looking more closely at harm reduction and the ways it works in Portugal and why some of these things either are impractical or or the obstacles that they face, for instance, around methadone delivery or access in the United States generally, and Oregon specifically, methadone access is generally poor. And that's a big component for Portugal's approach. So the story that I'm doing is going to look more closely at harm reduction and the role that it has in both Portugal and potentially here. And then, you know, I'm going to be following closely the politics of this for the next few months. There will be a lot of money that will go into these efforts to both preserve or to reverse Measure 110. And there's a lot of just political energy around it at the moment. So I'm hoping to follow that, but also look more closely at some of the ways some of the ways the programs are that are being funded by Measure 110, how they are working. And so that those are sort of my goals for the coming months.
Great. Well, and by the time folks are listening to this episode, that first story you mentioned on harm reduction, that may already be out, in which case we'll put a link to that and all of the coverage that you produced so far in the show description. If it's not out, then folks will find it soon on Oregon Live. Thank you, Noelle, for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And thank you for listening to Beat Check with The Oregonian. If you like the show, give us a 5-star rating and review in Apple Podcasts. It really helps people find the show. You can also spread the word by telling a friend to give us a listen. But the best way to support our journalism and stories like Noelle's is with a subscription to Oregon Live. You can do that at oregonlive.com/podsupport. Until next time.